Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Monday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Today is June 27th, 2011, and you're listening to show number 144. We are going to listen to a little bit about current events and read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine. I would like to remind everyone that this is a simple study session. Any listeners must consult their healthcare provider. If you are on the live chat, please introduce yourself. You may post your comments and questions there. Click listen, friend, favorite, or just comment right on the website of Blog Talk Radio. Share this with your friends on Twitter and Facebook. You can listen to the old downloads by downloading onto your computer, iTunes, or iPod, the archives. And you can, immediately after, it takes about a couple of minutes before each show is archived, you can download that or even embed it onto your own website so people can take advantage of that. If you are a professional homeopath and have colleagues that are in the homeopathy world community, you may place an application to join and get involved directly with the conversations that we have. I did not prepare an inspirational quote today. I can do a quick, search on the internet. We've got so many great things going on, and we also have Homeopathy World Community on Facebook. We have a fan page, and there has been a long conversation this past week about a quote from Helen Rowland. She lived in 1876 to 1950 and was an English-American writer. As a matter of fact, she was a humorist, an excellent humorist, and it really touches some truths for some or gets at some sensitive issues for other people. The quote that we were talking about was, "A wise woman puts a grain of sugar into everything she says to a man and takes a grain of salt with everything he says to her." So we think of those as the condiments on our table, the tastes, two of the five particular tastes that we have on our taste buds, and it adds spice to life, and she does cause us to think about how we interact and relate with the people that we do love. And so do take a look at, there's many other great quotes and great authors. In fact, one of them I have recently put up, Kavitha Kukunoor, who has written her incredible story that I love to tell people. It's very inspirational and motivational about her journey as a homeopathic physician in India and moving to America, starting all over, having a young family to bring up, and how she faced those obstacles and is now a practicing homeopath. The name of the book is called Beyond the Limits. There is a link directly on the front page of Homeopathy World Community. In addition to that, there is a daily online newspaper. Whether you are on or off Twitter, you can send people to this site to read some of the current events and health news. There are about 170 contributors. Not all of them are on every single day, but we have some great articles there. And so look up in the Google search engine, Homeopaths Daily by Debbie Brook, and you will find us. I want to thank our sponsor, Roger Van Voort, for showing his belief in HWC, Homeopathy World Community. And I hope that he does another special on his Complete Dynamics Computer Repertory. You can find that at www.completedynamics.com. I use it almost every day to study, search, and manage cases. The Practitioner Edition contains case management, analysis, and Materia Medica modules. It's a very powerful computer program. We're going to continue with a bit of news that's going on. First off, I want to say give a shout out to Dr. Dushyant Kamaldari in India, who has consistently been posting articles on the group section of HWC called Old Journals. He recently posted a story called Picric Acid in Diabetes, and we're going to see how this relates to today's talk concerning external applications to your treatment plan. And I just realized that I had not opened up the chat line, so I'm doing that now for anyone who wants to get on the chat and post their comments and questions about today's show if you are listening. Apologize for the delay. So here's the story that he posts for us this week. It comes from an old journal called the Indian Homeopathic Review. He didn't put the author, so maybe we can request him to do that. It says, an elderly gentleman belonging to the legal profession of fair color and robust frame had been suffering from diabetes for a long time and was under allopathic treatment all along. This gave him occasional relief, but no cure was effected. This also corroborates what Hahnemann has been teaching us the past couple of weeks. For the last few years, he has been losing flesh and becoming prostrated, especially after bodily and mental labor. He was requested by friends and relatives to try homeopathy, which he resolutely refused. At last, he was prevailed upon, and I was called to see him. He had about 25 grains of sugar in the urine, and the specific gravity was 1040. He passed about 80 to 100 ounces of urine in 4 and 20 hours, more urine at night, and in cloudy and rainy days. After office hours, he seemed utterly exhausted, but after some rest, he felt better. Appetite voracious, and much thirst for cold water. Among others, following symptoms were noticeable: pale and waxy and jaundiced face, especially after a day's work, buzzing and whistling in ears, sparks before the eyes, dullness of the head, and inability to think or for mental work. Studies upset him and produced profound prostration and vertigo. Sexual power was reduced, though there was nightly excitement. Haziness before the eyes, burning sensation in eyes, face, palm, and sole, fatigue after the least exertion. Motion aggravated and rest in bed ameliorated all of these symptoms. He was given all kinds of tonics and gold mixtures, and codeine pills were his favorite remedies. I tried phosphoric acid, which gave him temporary relief. His various engagements, both private and public, precluded him from his taking rest. Relapses were the consequent results. Then, calcarea phos and carbonicum, calcarea carb, were tried with occasional good results, but no perfect cure. The calcarea phos had on one occasion reduced his sugar level to 596 per ounce and specific gravity to 1025. The last medicine I gave, which did wonderful good. In fact, this remedy cured him thoroughly for the last 6 years. He had no trace of sugar in his urine, and he is now working in his profession as a young man, as if he was a young man, without that kind of prostration and brain fag. If you're listening and you're a homeopath, have you guessed what the remedy given was? I'm going to announce it now. It is picric acid. It has been used on and off for a long time. And the following final line says, I did not change his usual food during my treatment. So typically we do look for obstacles to cure, perhaps what the person is eating, to change the diet, to take care of an individual who has diabetes. But in this particular case, it was just the similimum, the correctly chosen remedy. And if you take a look at this article, I have posted, in addition, a few of the rubrics that are found in the repertory dealing with picric acid specifically. We know that it has dullness from mental exertion. We see that it has dullness from thinking a long time and unable to think with dullness. So the mental capacity is much reduced. And we know that picric acid is often used for students who are taking exams, medical students or persons who are really using their minds constantly. It says also it is good for impotency. And it's specifically whenever we hear the word prostration of the mind, mental exertion aggravates, or weakness of the will, mental exertion aggravates, immediately comes to mind this picric acid. And we know also that acids are typically good for persons who are feeling sensations of depression and low energy level. We're going to move ahead, and I'm going to go ahead and check to see if there's anybody listening today. We have someone who has logged in. I know that I didn't put a big announcement, but if you'd like, let us know who you are. And I'm going to ask that typically so that I know who's listening. And if you have any comments or questions, I'd be happy to do my best to answer them. And we're going to go ahead. I wanted to mention that there was a very big issue today regarding Australia changing their packaging laws on the cigarettes. And I just wanted to create a little bit of awareness of that and wondering what people think, whether it's going to make a difference and whether the fact that Philip Morris is going to actually claim that this is not legal action to remove the logos of their packages, how you feel about this particular issue. And we also do know that tobacco or cigarettes today are composed of hundreds of different ingredients rather than the authentic tobacco that is just the leaves. And it's a completely different kind of a creature, I think. We're going to go ahead now with our readings. And maybe I'll tell you also that Wednesday I'm hoping to have a special show about radiation leaks with Phyllis Georgic from Pennsylvania. Okay, so I'm going to do a quick little review. Yes, the last week on Wednesday, our Who's Reading the Organon show went through the aphorisms number 201 through 206, which taught about the mind-body wisdom and its ability to preserve itself when there is a malady within the body internally and how it is expressed on the outside. Hahnemann explains that the response of the vital force when these expressions externally are removed by physical means, such as the knife and burning or putting on creams or lotions or taking drugs, that the body has to respond in some way. We learned how the body's wisdom may localize a disease to preserve those vital organs like the liver, the heart, the brain. And yet both this internal malady plus the external malady will continue to grow and expand. And these methods that we use today, allopathy, and also in his day when they did cuttings and burnings of external expressions, that these methods don't work through his observations because, he says, they don't address the entire disease, but they're only taking into consideration a small portion of what can be seen. In these cases, when the body has not the strength to obliterate the disease, he says that a homeopathic, similar potentized remedy becomes a necessary catalyst for change to actually create this, what we call cure. He spoke of the ulcers of the psora, the canker of syphilis, and the figworts of psychosis as the three roots or miasms of disease. Hahnemann also stresses the importance of a good lifestyle and healthy emotional balance being grounded. And even when a patient attributes a sickness to some cause like getting wet, we as homeopaths and physicians must look to find the true root. Thus, he has left us at the end of aphorism number 206, searching the history of the patient's case. And I will begin with reading. When the above information has been gained, it still remains for the homeopathic physician to ascertain what kinds of allopathic treatment had up to that date been adopted for the chronic disease, what perturbing medicines had been chiefly and most frequently employed, also what mineral baths had been used, and what effects these had produced, in order to understand in some measure the degeneration of the disease from its original state, and where possible, to correct in part these pernicious artificial operations, or to enable him to avoid the employment of medicines that have already been improperly used. So how can we comment on this? He says that these are pernicious artificial operations. And we know that using a homeopathic remedy, we also call it the same word, an artificial disease, which is similar to and stronger than the natural disease. So this kind of an operation, he says, which is something that is a physical method, is what he is saying is improper. And to avoid it, both for the fact that we're looking at what are the after effects, the side effects, the secondary effects from using these methods, whether they be drugs or he calls them perturbing medicines or even mineral baths, saying to soak. People are always told when they have skin disease, go to the mineral baths, the different waters around the world, and soak in them, and there is relief. Usually this relief might be temporary. So he wants to know what methods the individual has adopted to try and relieve their suffering. The reasons, again, that he says to do this is to avoid using the medicines that have already been tried, because either they were used improperly, maybe he has a better way to use them, or, and perhaps his better way, is to use them in homeopathic form, because we do have many waters of the world that are used in homeopathic potency. So we want to know what has already been used, what the effects, or what we might say today are layers upon layers of the original miasm, and how that has changed the direction or the signs and symptoms that the body and mind show on that particular individual. Aphorism number 208, the age of the patient, his mode of living and diet, his occupation, his domestic position, his social relations, and so forth, must next be taken into consideration in order to ascertain whether these things have tended to increase his malady, or in how far they may favor or hinder the treatment. In like manner, the state of his disposition and mind must be attended to learn whether that presents any obstacle to the treatment or requires to be directed, encouraged, or modified. So here Hahnemann is saying how a physician takes the case, what information is most important to ascertain, and how the body, how the malady has increased due to the way that the individual is living, his diet, his occupation, and what his family relations, his status in society, all of these things that the patient will relate to the doctor or to the homeopath during the case history intake, because those are the things that are going to be spoken about. If you allow the patient to just speak freely, they're going to touch upon all these issues most naturally. Because they're going to feel a side effect if they're eating improperly. If they say, every time I eat sweets, I don't feel well, and then you find out specifically what is going on during that period in time. Or they're going to talk about their spouse or their kids or their family, other family members in relation to themselves. We're going to learn all of this information and take it into consideration and how it affects the person specifically, and how it increases their stress, their discomfort level, their dissatisfaction with life, or their physical manifestations. So we take all of that into consideration. And also, he says here that we must take into consideration their mind, how they think about these things, and whether the way that they are living is creating an obstacle to the treatment that is being given. So here again, it sounds like Hahnemann actually encouraged the individual to take a closer look at their lifestyle and make changes as necessary. And he says that modification. Aphorism number 209. After this is done, the physician should endeavor in repeated conversations with the patient to trace the picture of his disease as completely as possible, according to the directions given above, in order to be able to elucidate the most striking and peculiar characteristic symptoms, in accordance with which he selects the first antipsoriatic or other remedy having the greatest symptomatic resemblance for the commencement of the treatment, and so forth. So he's talking here, it sounds like, the first remedy given after a complete history is taken to understand the life of that individual, when we say take the picture of the disease as completely as possible, to find out what incidents, accidents, changes in his life, in his or her life, have taken place that might have nudged a person in one direction or another to bring out symptoms of a disorder. And so he is continuing on to tell us that we're looking now for striking, peculiar, characteristic symptoms. And this is highly utilized in selecting remedies, because whatever is really unique to that individual that is a change from a state of normalcy is going to be a big clue as to the proper remedy. So in the example we gave at the beginning of the show, this prostration of body and mind, inability to have mental activity, and feeling so weak that they have to lie down, caused by or aggravated by further mental activity and study, is very peculiar, striking, characteristic symptom, which leads us directly to the remedy of picric acid. Now we're going to go ahead with aphorism. Let me see, I don't think that we have any footnotes on these last remedies, these last aphorisms. So we're going to move ahead to aphorism number 210, which states, okay, and this is a lead up from the previous 209, which says that he's now looking for a psoriatic remedy relating to the miasm. So of psoriatic origin are almost all those diseases that I have above termed one-sided, which appear to be more difficult to cure in consequence of this one-sidedness, all their other morbid symptoms disappearing, as it were, before the single great prominent symptom. Of this character are what are termed mental diseases. They do not, however, constitute a class of disease sharply separated from all others, since in all other so-called corporeal diseases, the condition of the disposition and mind is always altered. And in all cases of disease, we are called on to cure the state of the patient's disposition is to be particularly noted, along with the totality of the symptoms. If we would trace an accurate picture of the disease in order to be able therefrom to treat it homeopathically with success. Let's take a closer look at what he's saying in aphorism 210. He says, the soric origin are almost all those diseases that he has recently been describing in the last dozen or so aphorisms. We learned previously the one-sided disease is a disease that only shows itself in one location, usually on the body, or one organ of the body. It seems to be an isolated malady, and yet it's a symptom of a totality of a disease. And he says that it is more difficult to cure these types of one-sided pictures because we're not seeing the complete picture of what the disease is. And all their morbid symptoms have been disappearing. So, for instance, when allopathy has used their methods to remove the signs and symptoms and we don't see them anymore, it makes it more difficult to see what is going on under the surface internally. As it was, he says, a single great prominent symptom. So where we would look for that prominent symptom, it may not be there for us to see anymore. And so here he says, of this character are termed mental diseases. And we have psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists who are looking at a person rather than holistically, very often as a one-sided disease, that the person only has a mental disease, that there's something wrong with their brain, that there's a chemical imbalance. And we know, if you've been checking in with Dr. Mercola and Mike Adams on Natural News and many other holistic physicians, that this is not the best way to deal with illness, just to give a drug specifically targeting the brain when that is only a one-sided manifestation. Rather, we have to look at the totality of what has happened in the person's life, what symptoms have perhaps been removed that would have given us a better idea of what's going on with that individual. He says, they do not constitute a class of disease sharply separated from all others. So you cannot say that this person just has bipolar disease or many other kinds of ADHD or all these other kinds of sicknesses that are only shown through the mind. There's much more to them. Very often, drugs have been given at a growing stage of life, and that's why the mental disease picture comes out so strongly, because it's not being able to manifest in this on the skin, which is leads us to the soric origin. So if there's been eczema and that's been suppressed, and then there's asthma and that's been suppressed, then the person gets depressed and maybe feels many mental manifestations, whether it is paranoia or suicidal or sadness. We have to look closely at all of those things. And the condition of the disposition and mind is always altered, he says. And in all cases of disease, we are called on to cure the state of the patient's disposition is to be particularly noted, along with the totality of the symptoms. So we're not separating out and only looking at the mind symptoms. We have to look at the totality. And this is an ongoing conversation on Homeopathy World Community, how many homeopaths are using mind symptoms. But if they are, as aphorism 209 says, if they are striking peculiar characteristic symptoms, those are very helpful in determining the proper remedy as you look at the totality of the case. If we would trace an accurate picture of the disease, so going back to taking a close look at the history, in order to be able therefrom to treat it homeopathically with success, and that is the main goal, to treat with success and annihilate the disease completely. Aphorism number 211. This holds good to such an extent that the state of the disposition of the patient often chiefly determines the selection of the homeopathic remedy as being a decidedly characteristic symptom which can least of all remain concealed from the accurately observing physician. Okay, so here he kind of goes back and refers to aphorism 209, which it seems to be explicitly stated, that if the mind symptom is very characteristic, it can be used to make a homeopathic remedy selection. And I think that there, I might have missed a footnote on aphorism number 210. Let's see if I find it. It states, footnote for 210, how often, for instance, do we not meet a mild, soft disposition in patients who have for years been afflicted with the most painful diseases, so that the physician feels constrained to esteem and compassionate the sufferer. But if he subdue the disease and restore the patient to health, as is frequently done in homeopathic practice, he is often astonished and horrified at the frightful alteration in his disposition. He's referring to the patient's disposition. He often witnesses the occurrence of ingratitude, cruelty, refined malice, and propensities most disgraceful and degrading to humanity, which were precisely the qualities possessed by the patient before he grew ill. Those who were patient when well often become obstinate, violent, hasty, or even intolerant and capricious, or impatient or desponding when ill. Those formerly chaste and modest often become lascivious and shameless. A clear-headed person not infrequently becomes obtuse of intellect, while one ordinarily weak-minded becomes more prudent and thoughtful. And a man slow to make up his mind sometimes acquires great presence of mind and quickness of resolve. This is really fascinating information. He's giving us examples, I'm sure, from his personal experience when taking a case and seeing a patient who, and he gave us these examples, these mild-mannered people, these patient people, these soft-spoken people, all of a sudden, when they are given the correct similimum, their disposition, their speech, their communication, their way of interacting in the world turns around 180 degrees. So instead of a physical discharge, we usually think of a physical discharge as a good thing, getting it out of the body, getting rid of it, getting rid of toxins. Here it is an emotional, mental problem that is going to be turned around by getting that out of the body. And we as homeopaths must not be too anxious, too quick on the draw to change anything. Don't change the remedy prescription when you see this change, because we know we've touched on something very, very deep, which he would most likely consider to be soric. And now we're going to see changes in the body and changes in the personality until they can even out and come to a balance. Aphorism number 212, the creator of therapeutic agents has also had particular regard to this main feature of all diseases, the altered state of the disposition and mind. For there is no powerful medicinal substance in the world which does not very notably alter the state of the disposition and mind in the healthy individual who tests it. And every medicine does so in a different manner. So here he is referring similarly to provings, which are as if clinical trials, that a drug has a medicinal property which will change the person's emotional state of mind, their method of thinking about themselves and the world, their way of interacting in the world. All of these occur through the use of medicines and drugs. And he takes complete note of this. These are his observations. So that's what a therapeutic agent will do in terms of disease. He also states in aphorism number 212 that every medicine does so in a different manner. And so this is why we study lifelong, because there's so many thousands of medicines. We need to understand how these medicines will change the thinking, the disposition, and the mind. This also reflects back on the previous aphorism stating that the mind and the body are one. They are reflecting and mirroring each other. So what is happening there? We need to really take into consideration the disposition for selecting the appropriate similimum. Aphorism number 213. We shall therefore never be able to cure conformably to nature, that is to say, homeopathically, if we do not, in every case of disease, even in such as are acute cases, observe, along with the other symptoms, those relating to the changes in the state of the mind and the disposition, and if we do not select for the patient's relief from among the medicines a disease force, which in addition to the similarity of its other symptoms to those of the disease, is also capable of producing a similar state of the disposition of mind, disposition and mind. And so he's really hitting home that, okay, we're going to take the case, we're going to see the physical manifestation, we're going to see the warts, the rash, the hives, whatever is going on that we can touch, but there's something beneath that, this thing that we cannot touch, but we can see, just like if it's the wind, we can see the clouds moving in the wind. And so here we can see the kind of breathing that the person is having. Are they under stress? Can we see their disposition just from that, from the way they hold their body, their gestures? Do they feel like they're tight? Do they feel stiff? These are things that are also expressed in the way that they speak, their words, and their emotions. There is a footnote here to aphorism number 213. Here's an example he gives. Thus, aconite will seldom or never effect either a rapid or permanent cure in a patient of a quiet, calm, equitable disposition. And just as little will nux vomica be serviceable where the disposition is mild and phlegmatic, pulsatilla where it is happy, gay, and obstinate, or ignatia where it is imperturbable and disposed neither to be frightened nor vexed. And so let's take a little bit closer look at his examples that he is providing for us. I want to thank the listeners today for sticking with me. And if you do have comments, let me know. So here he's saying, he gave the examples of aconite, which we always seem to use at the beginning of an illness when there is extreme fright, when a person feels they're going to die, during a event of croup or a extreme accident and there is shock. So he says you're not going to be selecting the remedy aconite and it will not work or be effective. It will not have its traditional role of being rapid and providing a permanent cure if you're giving it to a person who has a quiet, calm, equitable disposition. And he gives a second example of Nux Vomica, where we know this is a person of addictive personality who likes spicy foods and hot things and maybe even hot-tempered. And so here he says if you see someone who has a disposition that is mild and phlegmatic, then that is not going to be an appropriate remedy and won't be of service. He gives another example, Pulsatilla, which we know is the windflower, the anemone, that is going to be very moody, that's going to be changeable, that their illnesses are going to change. They're going to say this pain moves from place to place on their body. And they need a lot of support. And here we have, and they can be easily in a state of depression or sadness. So here he says the Pulsatilla is not going to be the correct similimum selection based, again, if we see a person who is happy and gay and even is obstinate, perhaps Silica would be a better selection for obstinacy or Calcarea carbonicum for obstinacy. But Pulsatilla is not going to be the correct selection based on that disposition. He gives another example of Ignatia, where he says which we know is one of the highly used grief remedies, a person who is has symptoms that seem to be opposite of what you would expect. And here he says it's imperturbable and disposed to be frightened nor vexed. So I guess for Ignatia, the person is more immovable and not to be, this person is frightened nor vexed. So very irritable, very irritable. Okay, we're going to move ahead to aphorism number, we just read 213. We shall therefore never be able to cure conformably to nature, that is to say homeopathically. We just read that one. On to number 214. The instructions I have to give relative to the cure of mental diseases may be confined to a very few remarks, as they are to be cured in the same way as all other diseases, namely, by a remedy which shows, by the symptoms it causes in the body and mind of a healthy individual, a power of producing a morbid state as similar as possible to the case of disease before us. In no other way can they be cured. And he is restating the main principle of homeopathy, likes, cures, likes. And this is used as the method of finding the remedy, no matter what the illness, no matter whether it is something manifesting in the mind, in the emotions, in the body, even in the spirit. Whatever it is, he always goes back to the core belief, philosophy, and theory of curing likes through likes by taking the total case and understanding what is presenting in front of you. And so he says he has little remarks. He's not going to separate it out, as perhaps in allopathy they separate out their specialties. For him, he does not have a need to do that. Each person is taken as an individual case and with a open mind. And so this is how he approaches health and healing and mental well-being as well. Aphorism number 215. Thank you again for joining us. If you've just come in, we've gone through 3/4 of the show already. We're up to aphorism number 215 of Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. He states, almost all the so-called mental and emotional diseases are nothing more than corporeal diseases in which the symptom of derangement of the mind and the disposition peculiar to each of them is increased, while the corporeal symptoms decline more or less rapidly, till it at length attains the most striking one-sidedness, almost as though it were a local disease in the invisible, subtle organ of the mind or disposition. So here, he's referring back to what he's been teaching for the last dozen aphorisms about something appearing to be one-sided, something appearing to be localized when you do not see the complete picture. And this is because these other symptoms are no longer there to be seen. So it is the so-called mental or emotional diseases. We should not, as homeopaths, separate them out. They are simply the corporeal disease in which the symptom of derangement of the mind and the disposition peculiar to each of them is increased. So we're seeing an expansion of that aspect of the disease. And also, if we refer back to the aphorism we just read regarding what are the properties of drugs and medicines, each of them has its own special and different manner of expressing itself. So therefore, we can refer back to the medicines that are being used, whether they be plant, mineral, animal, or imponderable, or even nosode. Each of them is going to have an aspect which relates to the mental, the mind, the disposition, and the emotions. Okay, aphorism number 216 states, the cases are not rare in which a so-called corporeal disease or physical disease that threatens to be fatal, for instance, he gives us a suppuration of the lungs or the deterioration of some other important viscous or some other disease of acute character, example in childbed, becomes transformed into insanity, into a kind of melancholia or into mania by a rapid increase of the physical symptoms that were previously present, whereupon the corporeal symptoms lose all their danger. These latter improve almost to perfect health, or rather, they decrease to such a degree that their obscured presence can only be detected by the observation of a physician gifted with perseverance and penetration. In this manner, they become transformed into a one-sided and, as it were, a local disease in which the symptom of the mental disturbance, which was at first but slight, increases so as to be the chief symptom and in a great measure occupies the place of the other corporeal symptoms, whose intensity it subdues in a palliative manner so that, in short, the affections of the grosser corporeal organs become, as it were, transferred and conducted to the almost spiritual, mental, and emotional organs, which the anatomist has never yet and never will reach with his scalpel. So it's almost as if the individual is escaping the scalpel, is escaping further physical impositions on the body through the burns, the creams, the knife, whatever, because it appears as if the physical manifestations have reduced to such a degree that they have almost disappeared. But in its place, everything has been pushed toward the mental derangement. And he gives some examples that it seems like a person has been transformed. I think this one is pretty well self-explanatory, but he is talking about something that happens to push the individual to make a flip that person. And here he gave us an example of childbed. So the woman in labor may go into this kind of insanity or melancholy. We know that there's a lot of discussion about postpartum depression or other kinds of things of this nature, where suddenly a person's mind kind of flips and goes out, and this is what we see. Now, he says, only the gifted physician with perseverance and penetration can find out exactly the totality of the illness. We're going to go to aphorism number 217. We continue reading Hahnemann's Organon. He says, in these diseases, we must be very careful to make ourselves acquainted with the whole of the phenomena, both those belonging to the corporeal symptoms and also, indeed, particularly, those appertaining to the accurate apprehension of the precise character of the chief symptom of the peculiar and always predominating state of the mind and disposition, in order to discover, for the purpose of extinguishing the entire disease, among the remedies whose pure effects are known, a homeopathic medicinal pathogenic force, that is to say, a remedy which in its list of symptoms displays, with the greatest possible similarity, not only the corporeal morbid symptoms present in the case of disease before us, but also especially this mental and emotional state. He doesn't give us any examples, but of course we did do a reading at the beginning about picric acid, and we know, I will repeat, that the acid remedies such as phosphoric acid will have extreme depression, will manifest in that way. The acids affect the body. And this is aphorism number 217. His goal is to extinguish the entire disease, and we do this through the accurate case-taking, taking the totality, the history of the person, so that we can understand what physical manifestations are no longer present. And maybe we will be including those in the repertory, in our materium, understanding the drugs, the medicines that are written in the Materia Medica. Aphorism number 218. To this collection of symptoms belongs, in the first place, the accurate description of all the phenomena of the previous so-called corporeal disease, before it degenerated into a one-sided increase of the physical symptom and became a disease of the mind and disposition. This may be learned from the report of the patient's friends. So here he includes asking others, what did you know? What did you know about this individual? If they're unable to, if the person is now in a state where they can't even speak clearly and tell you with clarity what happened in their life, and they're in a state of depression, inability to speak, insanity, a hysteria, whatever it might be, you can listen to the report of the patient's friends to find out more about how other people observe that individual and what changes have taken place. Perhaps they talked about something in their life, some physical manifestation, that now we see their disposition and character has changed. Aphorism number 219. A comparison of these previous symptoms of the corporeal disease with the traces of them that still remain, though they have become less perceptible, but which even now sometimes becomes prominent, when a lucid interval and a transient alleviation of the psychical disease occurs, will serve to prove them to be still present, though obscured. So here we might think about alternation of symptoms, that we might see mental clarity when the physical symptoms are not visible, or there is fogginess or inability to concentrate or fuzziness or being in a fog, whatever the physical, once the physical symptoms are not showing anymore, the mental clarity is lost. And this could even show up with insomnia, ability to sleep soundly and deeply and get a good rest. Aphorism number, that was 219. Let me see if we have the next aphorism available. 219 states. That was one we just did, 220. By adding to this the state of the mind and disposition accurately observed by the patient's friends and by the physician himself, we have thus constructed the complete picture of the disease, for which, in order to effect the homeopathic cure of the disease, a medicine capable of producing strikingly similar symptoms, and especially an analogous disorder of the mind, must be sought from for among the antipsychotic remedies in the sick, psychical disease have already lasted some time. So if this, the psychic changes have been going on for some time, we really must bring this up to a higher degree of a strength when you're doing an analysis, when you're doing your repertorization and you're looking at all of your rubrics. You must be covering this change in the mental state of mind, even while you do include the physical history and manifestations. He says that they are there and maybe in a much lesser degree, but that is not the most striking. The most striking change in that individual is their change of disposition, which he gave some examples of previously for those particular remedies. Aphorism number 220. I'm just going to give a quick check on how much time we have. I think we might be able to read aphorism number 220 quickly before the end of the show. 221. If, however, insanity or mania caused by fright, vexation, the abuse of spirituous liquors have suddenly broken out as an acute disease in the patient's ordinary calm state, although it almost always arises from internal sorrow, like a flame bursting forth from it, yet when it occurs in this acute manner, it should not be immediately treated with antipsychotics, but in the first place, the remedies indicated for it out of the other class of proved medicaments, for example, aconite, belladonna, stramonium, hyoscyamus, and mercury. So here are, he's elucidating remedies that are for a striking, shocking, immediate, almost as if they were acute disease. In highly potentized, minute, homeopathic doses, in order to subdue it so far that the sore shall for the time revert to its former latent state, wherein the patient appears as if quite well. And so we're going to end on that note. I hope it has been enlightening and that you have learned a little bit more as we study the organon of medicine, our main foundation of homeopathy. I welcome you to read the articles that are on Homeopathy World Community. Every day there are new postings, there are tips, daily tips, there are many, many groups that have specific interests. And remember, you need to be a homeopath who has been invited to join, although the network is completely open to read all of the articles. And you can join our HWC fan page on Facebook. And please help promote our work around the world. Take the widget from the radio show, put it on your website. And I want to thank everyone for listening today. I am very heartened when we have guests and listeners sharing our knowledge about homeopathy. Until next Monday, we will continue with the reading. On Wednesday, we're going to have a special guest. On Thursday, we're going to be continuing vaccinations and your rights in the United States. And on Sunday, we will have our meditation for healing.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with host Debbie Brock on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to take your organon off the shelf and read it.